Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question or comment for us, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Without further ado, grab yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Good morning, everybody, or afternoon or evening, wherever you might be listening. Thank you for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe. We hope you're having a good day and a good week. And as we close out April and move towards May, we hope that everybody out there is safe and well. And we want to take a minute and thank everybody for all the work that they're doing and all the sacrifices that they're making. And again, we just hope you stay safe. Dave, how are you doing down there?
I'm doing good. We're getting towards the end of April. I'm getting a little tired of being cooped up like everyone else is.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're, I guess it's not really quarantine. It's more shelter in place.
Yeah.
And our governor has been saying that in North Carolina that we were going to be staying sheltered in place until the 8th, which was, I think, a week longer than what we originally anticipated. So I'm not sure what that means for school. I have not heard from school on whether or not we're going back into class or what.
Gotcha.
Those of you guys out there that are still working on the front lines, keep at it. Thank you for all you're doing. You're doing a service for all those pets out there, all those people that really need you right now. So thank you so much. For everything you guys are doing.
Absolutely. I forget your school schedule. Are you on year round, or does your program have summers built into it? Like summer
no
breaks?
No summers. We have a break like over Christmas. We have a three week break.
Gotcha. So it wouldn't be like go back to school in the fall for
nope.
you like it would. Okay. So yeah. So it's just some arbitrary date you're gonna go back into the classroom. Hopefully.
Right. Yeah. So we just finished week five of our 10-week term. So I mean we have another one starting in another 5 weeks. So I've been thinking about what if we just delayed the beginning of the next term.
Yeah.
To try and get back on track. But you know if we do that we're going to be having classes on Christmas, which is not something the students want to do. So,
sure.
or the school wants to do, quite honestly. So, you know, we're waiting to hear back from the school on where we're going to go back into school and how that's going to work out. So, you know, every day they say, oh, we should know by now if we're going back. And I say, no, the last changes we heard like the night before. So, you know, and it's no fault of the school. We're in a very dynamic situation where things can change, you know, overnight. So right now we're just waiting to hear back, and I'm planning for being back in the 4th, but I'm not counting on it really.
Yeah. Ours is a little bit the same in that, you know, our students will be gone through the end of the term and they don't anticipate them coming back till the fall. And initially they had said for us through May 4th and that, you know, the services would still stay away other than, you know, for consultations or whatever, but they've kind of now, the school has pushed that back to May 15th, where they'll start maybe trying to gradually integrate people back in, and we'll see what that looks like. But
well, you're in a different situation than we are here, where our numbers are far less than yours. So, you know, you may have a different dynamic, different situation going on up there than we do.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, I know, you know, especially for so many of our residents under the internal medicine umbrella whose exams were canceled this year, you know, neurology, cardiology, IM, all of those, you know, and all the residents that maybe just started out or the internships and the residencies that are going to be starting or being, you know, some of them are being delayed a bit. So, you know, it's just a very, very awkward and difficult situation for all. So, hopefully we kind of start slowly and kind of works out as we go, but we'll just have to figure it out. So
at some point we'll get back to normal. It's just, just like we said, the normal that we're going to go back to is not what we were used to. So this is going to be something that it's going to change everything how we do, whether it's subtle changes or drastic changes. But when we go back to being quote unquote normal, it's going to be different.
Yeah. I honestly hope that it is. I mean, I said, I had a conversation with my supervisor the other day that I feel like we've been gifted an incredible opportunity in this terrible situation to actually look at some things and maybe make changes with scheduling or staffing or different things that we really never would have the opportunity to just make changes and try things out. But with the reduced staffing numbers that we have right now and everything that's going on in the hospital, like actually now is a perfect time to maybe try to implement some of these things and experiment a little bit, if you will, yeah. and see if we can come up with better ways to do things. Because if we really haven't learned anything, and as you said, like, we do go back to the way we were doing things prior, like, I'll feel like we missed an incredible opportunity to try. Just try something out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But so,
as people like we are, you know, VTSs and educators and people that have been in this field a long time, you know, the reason that we're in this field a long time is because we're not doing the same things. We're learning things. So if we don't learn something from this, then it was all for nothing.
Right.
You know, I just hope that somehow moving forward, every hospital, every even big corporations, private practices, I hope we all learn something from this that's going to make things a little bit easier for us. And not only that, but just having some more compassion for our staff.
Yeah.
And we're kind of transitioning into May, where we're going to be doing our mental health issues.
Yeah.
You know, as our technicians are going through this, and our veterinary staff and our veterinarians are doing this as well. But as we're going through all this, you know, mental health is a big issue right now, because we're at an all-time high for stress of not only just the volume of people that are coming in. You've said that sometimes the volume has not really changed much other than the ICU. The ICU might be a little bit different because you're not seeing those referral cases. But for the most part, the emergency services, they're seeing the same, if not higher numbers.
Right.
In part of that, because some of the vets don't want to see them, or it could be just that, you know, we always have on the weekends. Why are the weekends busier? Because people are sitting at home staring at their dogs and realizing that, oh, it's been vomiting for a week. Maybe I should bring it in now. So now we have owners.
It's convenient for me.
Yeah, exactly. So now we have owners that are home all the time and realizing all of these situations that are going on, and that can increase our load. And not only the increase in the load, but the shifts that I've worked during this, that stress of, what if this person that I'm talking to right now has it but doesn't know it, not showing symptoms, and then I'm going to get it and then bring it back. So that stress is huge, where it's stressful just to go into work because we're putting ourselves at risk every time we talk to somebody new.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned in there May coming up with Mental Health Awareness Month, and you and I talked about starting this or doing this a couple of months ago pre-COVID, that you know, maybe we would dedicate May's episodes to mental health awareness, and tonight's episode kind of leads into it a little bit.
We do,
And we didn't really anticipate it being part of the series, but it certainly fits in. And then for next month, all three of our episodes, the way the rotation worked out, we'll have three full episodes, are going to be on talking about depression and compassion fatigue and, you know, suicide and things of that sort, and how to recognize troubling signs in ourselves or in our coworkers, different avenues to deal with some of this stuff. And, you know, especially as you were saying, in light of everything that's going on right now, I don't know that we could have come up with, you know, a better time to do these kinds of things. And this won't be the only time we talk about them. We have some other topics, you know, we want to talk about, and we'll come back to probably later in the year too. So it's a recurring theme. It's not going away anytime soon, and we want to continue to have these discussions. But
it's just with COVID coming in, you know, we'd already been planning to do this. However, adding COVID into it and the stresses of the job has put a new twist on, you know, why we're going to be talking about this.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, those that are affected or deal with anxiety, depression, any of those kinds of things, I feel like this kind of situation only magnifies that and gives those individuals yet another thing to be anxious about or be depressed about, and just make it even, unfortunately, a little bit easier to get into those rabbit holes or into those cycles. Yep. And it's all you hear right now. I mean, shoot, we're talking about it now, even though we said we would try to not.
Right.
But the reality is it's part of our reality right now.
Right.
And we're just trying to bring light to things that, frankly, we know, and we know people really well that are going through some of these things. And so hopefully by just continuing to talk about it and bringing it out there, and also like encouraging ways to effectively in a healthy manner attack some of these things, deal with some of these things, hopefully we help at least a little bit.
And giving our listeners some tools to actually get through this. You know, we've already recorded three of the other episodes?
Two episodes.
So we've recorded two other episodes for this series, and I learned something that I had never even heard of in both of these episodes we've already recorded. So,
you know,
I feel like this is going to be really helpful for our listeners that may be dealing with some of this stuff, and not only just the people that are dealing with it, but people that are working with those people that are dealing with and giving them avenues of ways to help people out. So helping each other and lifting each other up, I think, is going to be really important in this time.
Yeah. And just, you know, again, just actually discussing it and helping hopefully remove even just a tiny bit of the stigma, and
that,
you know, it's okay to feel how you feel. It's okay to be who you are. You know, it's going to be a bit of a heavy series. And when June rolls around, we'll kind of get back to a more standard, if you will, format and have, you know, be a little bit more all over the place.
Yeah.
But this is, again, an issue that's not going to go away anytime soon. And we'll have different discussions about, you know, workplace dynamics and all those kinds of things. But just with the calendar month, we thought it would be a really good time to do this. And I think, honestly, with where the world is right now, it's probably couldn't have come at a better time.
So. Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
So what do you think? Should we let him get on into tonight's episode?
Let's get into it.
Yeah,
they don't want to hear us talking that much anymore.
Let's
get on to our guest.
They'd rather hear our guest talk. I know she's probably one of the featured speakers at any conference, because she's this woman has a direct line to my funny bone, and I just truly enjoy listening to her. So hopefully you guys out there will as well. Enjoy the episode. Please be safe, be happy, be healthy, and when this is all over, I can't wait to have a beer with all of you and just chat about whatever it is that's non-COVID related. Have a good night, everybody. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Of course, unfortunately, the sit-down portion is still closed, Dave. We're drive-through and takeout only still, but you got any good coffee down there?
Oh, you know me. I've got my Black Silk going, and it's iced because I'm from New England, so.
Given who our guest is tonight, I'll probably end up doing this at the end of the show. I almost, instead of having a cup of coffee, I almost went with a coffee stout. I have a bottle of Triple Shot from Treehouse that I think I'll just wait till the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's supposed to be we're supposed to have that in the
I know. So that's why I just have my regular old breakfast blend. But really excited for tonight's episode. I think we have another really cool guest, and we're going to talk a lot about some cool stuff. So what do you think? You wanted to jump into it?
Jump on in.
All right. So tonight's guest, or today's guest as it were, is Amy Newfield. She's currently employed with Blue Pearl Veterinary Partners as a project manager for training and health and wellness. After working for general practice in many years, she found her passion in emergency medicine and obtained her VTS in emergency and critical care. she's held several board positions in the Avectin Academy, Academy of Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care Technicians and Nurses. We'll ask a couple questions about that. Very well published on many subjects and speaks at conferences all over nationally and internationally. And she lives here in New England in Massachusetts. One other question I'm going to want to ask her is about her diving and all the cool pictures she posts online. So without further ado, Amy, welcome. Welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. Can we get you a cup of coffee?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Actually, it shocks a lot of people because I have a lot of energy, but I don't actually drink coffee. So I will take you up on that coffee stout, however. So Treehouse is pretty epic, and I will have a coffee stout any day of the week. So absolutely.
sounds good. I'll get you a glass of Triple Shot.
Fantastic.
So we always kind of start out with our guests, kind of talk about their career path, because one of the things we try to do is shine lights on areas of the profession that maybe people don't know exists. And there's always just like really cool stories that people think, oh my gosh, I never really thought about that. So if you don't mind, take a couple of minutes and just kind of talk about your career path, where you started and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started in the 90s, and I went to a school here in Massachusetts, Becker College, and graduated sometime in the 90s and started in general practice. And I actually really didn't know, I think, what to expect upon graduation. I had done some externships actually at Tufts University and at a wildlife center, and wasn't quite sure where I would find my passion, but ended up in a fantastic general practice, kind of outside of Tufts University. So in a wooded area where I think every other day we had a lot of porcupine quills to remove out of dogs. So that I got really good at that. And I was really fortunate because the owner, it was owned by a husband and wife, wife, and the husband was the original veterinarian, and now his son was managing and owning the practice. And he really believed in utilizing veterinary technicians to their fullest. So I was eternally grateful, because while he didn't have every single, you know, veterinary assistant as a credentialed veterinary technician, he did utilize everybody's skills to the best of their ability, which was really great, because I know that we see a lot of technicians or assistants enter into this workforce and then they don't get utilized, they get discouraged, and then they leave. So for me, I had a super positive, wonderful practice. I was there for almost 6 years and worked my way up to managing the practice, which was great. It was a kind of an oopsie, I became a manager story. So didn't really know what I was doing, but fumbled along. What I found myself at the end of that time really looking forward to was helping patients with complex disease processes. And, you know, not that I ever want to wish ill will on an animal, but if they are injured or hurt, I do want to be the one to help them. And so for me, I really found myself gravitating to complex trauma cases, complex cases that like septic abdomens and things like that. And back in the 90s, we had Tufts University and Angel Memorial Hospital, and that was it for specialty hospitals here in Massachusetts. So most of the general practices handled their own emergencies. And in fact, we were on call overnight with pagers. And so this is making me sound really ancient.
Flashback.
I know, right? So kids, now pagers were where they couldn't type words. You just got a number and you had to call the number and someone had to tell you what was going on in the world. So, and we all slept with pagers next to our beds and they would make ungodly sounding noises and you'd have to call in and say, what's the phone call about? And the phone company would say, oh, Mrs. Smith's dog's not doing well. And of course, the person who got paged was always the veterinary technician. Then you'd have to determine if Mrs. Smith was an emergency, and then you'd have to wake up your veterinarian. So this is what happened back then. So yeah, I really did enjoy the complex cases that we had. I remember, you know, staying overnight for, I don't even know, I think a week straight with a status epilepticus. And I just was fascinated with the whole disease process. So right after about 6 years, I decided, you know what, I'm going to jump ship and I'm going into specialty medicine. And then I worked my way through a couple different specialty medicine. I was kind of part-time here and there at a variety of them because I think I was just so nervous. I didn't want to commit to one in general, but I absolutely found my love and my passion was supposed to be emergency medicine. And then I ended up at the hospital that I'm currently at, which was privately owned up until 2013. And then Blue Pearl purchased the hospital from a single owner in 2013. And now I work for the largest company in the world. Who knew? So started off with mom and dad at my veterinary hospital. And now I am owned by the biggest conglomerate there is. So there you go.
Wow. So in your role now, are you still doing much clinical work, or are you more, I don't want to say office position, but like in a more off the floor type of position now?
Yeah. So in 2015, I did take a larger role with Blue Pearl. I do get to work one, maybe two shifts a month at my current location. And I've been with that hospital, I think, at least 15 years at this point. So, yeah. So it is great that I still get to pull shifts, but not as many as I'd love to. I am mostly regulated to computers and office space. The other nice thing that my current position allows me to do is to travel to a lot of the Blue Pearl locations. So I get to check out all their cool stuff and walk through their emergency departments and see what they're doing. And you get to hang out with different teams, which is really fun. So,
although right now you're probably not traveling anywhere, right?
I am not traveling anywhere. I am grounded. So. Yeah.
I too have worked in both realms. I've worked in the private practice. I've also worked in corporate practice. And actually, I think the corporate practice that I used to work in was just recently bought by Blue Pearl. So what would you say are some of the main benefits to working for a corporate practice versus a private practice?
Yeah, good question. I think that they both have pros versus cons. I mean, you say the word corporation and people get like, they shudder, like as if an evil spirit has entered into the room to take their soul. And I don't really I have to say that for me, it has been as much of a positive situation as I think even a general practice. When I was working for small general practices, I found that they had sometimes better benefits, maybe slightly better pay, but overall the problems between hospitals are pretty universal, right? You still end up with the turnover, the shortness of staff. Like, there's not anybody who's well staffed in this profession, regardless of who you work for. All technicians, are working two jobs. It doesn't matter who you work for. So the same problems still exist. I think that some of the stressors on big business are things that if you feel like you don't have any control, for example, in a smaller practice, the owner generally gets input from everyone on the hospital team. You know, hey guys, we're going to be increasing our prices. Just want to let you know, what do you think about this? Or we're bringing in this new piece of equipment. What do you guys think about this? So there's a lot more input that you can provide on a smaller hospital level. Where the positivity happens on a big hospital level is that, one, you have more money, right? So when equipment breaks, you have someone who's there to really help you in terms of trying to get that equipment fixed. I will say that in 2013, we had a lot of broken equipment, and that was one of the first things that getting purchased by Blue Pearl, all of a sudden, all of our equipment got upgraded and fixed, and we got a ventilator, and we got an oxygen cage, and I was like, this is amazing. Usually there tends to be a larger amount of funds in big companies. The other thing is I've worked with some pretty crazy owners in my lifetime. So in a private practice, the buck stops at that owner, right? So right. If you have an issue with the owner and how they're managing the hospital, too bad. That's the way it goes. And I have seen small hospitals destroyed by their leadership, and there's nothing that the employees can do because there's nobody else to report to. In a big company, if you're unhappy with your practice manager, there's a regional person, and then there's a person above that regional person, and then there's someone above that person, and then eventually you get to the CEO and the COO, and then there's even people above that, and then you get all the way up to the Mars family. So if you want, you can just keep climbing the rungs of discontent that you have until you get somebody who will be willing to listen to you. So I will say when I worked in smaller practices, there were times where I felt helpless. Like, there's nobody here. This owner's completely lost her marbles. What am I supposed to do? I don't have any way, no out, short of quitting. Here, I feel like there is hopefully some light at the end of the tunnel because you have more systems in place. But again, pros and cons, because on the flip side of that, you're sitting there, you get an email, and all of your prices have changed. And you're like, awesome. That's great. Yay, us. So, pros and cons on both aspects.
Gotcha. So working as like with training and health and wellness, like your position specifically, what does it look like? I remember in one of our emails going back and forth, I think you said something along the lines of like your supervisor was a social worker or somewhere in there. I might have botched that up a little bit. But like, what is it that you do either in clinic or for Blue Pearl? What does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have sort of this hybrid role, which is really fantastic. I used to focus mostly on training, but then I was abducted by the social worker team, which is wonderful abduction if you are to be abducted. It's good to be abducted by social workers. So it kind of just came to be, I think, because my boss is a licensed social worker. Okay. We acquired a hospital, Blue Pearl acquired their largest hospital, which was in Pittsburgh. Over 400 associates actually are part of that. Oh, yeah, it's gigantic. So that is a big beast of a hospital. And they had actually employed a social worker, and which had been with them for quite some time. And she's, you know, when their hospital was purchased by Blue Pearl, she had the same reservations, which is, this big company just purchased us. There's no way they're going to keep me. They don't know what a social worker does. But, you know, she always tells the story that when the Pittsburgh Hospital hired her on, they didn't really have a full grasp of what social work was. So social work is anything that encompasses being the social aspect of being a human being. When we hear about social work in hospital settings, we think compassion fatigue and burnout and suicide prevention. Like, those are the givens.
Right.
But the other things that social work brings to the table is communication issues, issues between employees, you know, things like that, which is really great. And so even team development, growing teams. So for Pittsburgh, they brought this social worker in thinking that she would be able to help with the burnout and the compassion fatigue. But what they didn't see was that she was also able to alleviate the stress of the team because she started working with the clients. A picture, you know, and this is so commonplace in human medicine. Picture an upset client who just had to euthanize their dog, right? We've all had this happen.
Yeah.
There is a sad, despondent owner. She won't leave the bereavement room. There's a lot of sobbing. She doesn't know how she can go on in life. This was her best friend, right? We've all had clients that have broken our hearts like that. And we as veterinary technicians, assistants, veterinarians, even, you know, our veterinary medical receptionists, the front office, we sit there and we try our best to console that client. And it takes up our time. And it also takes up a lot of energy. And it's emotional for us.
Right.
But when we think about it, we're not social workers. No one trained us. No one trained us to deal with that human emotion. And so in those cases, in this Pittsburgh hospital, when you have these clients who can't leave the hospital, who are really struggling, who are maybe even grappling with understanding how their 3-year-old dog just, you know, got a diagnosis of lymphoma, imagine if you had a social worker and you could say, as a veterinary technician or as a veterinarian, let me get someone to talk to you. And you go get a trained professional and bring them into the room, and then you continue on with your job.
Yeah.
That is a game changer. So it's pretty fantastic work what these social workers have done. And then I think I came into the picture because my social worker and I were talking, and I do a lot of team development and creating healthy teams and coaching of teams and things like that. And she said, you know, you have a great way of communicating to hospital teams and building up teams and getting them to learn how to talk to each other. How about we collaborate and figure out how we can start rolling some of these ideas out into all of the hospitals? So that's kind of how I morphed into that role.
Wow. It's fascinating because, you know, we have a social worker on staff now at Tufts, and I think it's kind of the reverse in that he was brought on to deal specifically with clients, you know, those like you were describing, you know, the ones that can't leave, or the very irate clients, or some of the difficulties with finances and stuff. So he was brought on for more of that role. And he's an amazing human being. It's been fantastic having him on staff. And just now, I think he's starting to get more involved in some of the interpersonal or some of the, you know, the staff issues and such. That's not what he was brought on for, but I think they're finally realizing, hey, he can actually help in this arena as well. And it's just been hugely, hugely helpful in a lot of different ways. It's really interesting that it kind of worked backwards.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd like to fast forward to 10 years from now where this is a normal thing in our hospitals, where people aren't going, what do you mean you're bringing in a social worker? Like, it's some weird stigma of, like, you know, here to help solve all of our problems. It's normal in human health, and it's not in veterinary medicine. So
it's not. And I mean, you know, obviously the three of us have done this collectively for more years than I'd care to count right now. and I work at a vet school, and my wife just graduated veterinary school. Like, I know they're not learning it in school either as veterinarians, how to deal with these kinds of situations. So it should be, as you were saying, a licensed professional that's trained how to deal with this. It makes so much sense.
Well, yeah. And it's also the, you know, we think about technicians are like jacks of all trade, like human nurses. They usually kind of hone in on one specific skill in one specific arena, whereas technicians, we're taking x-rays, we're drawing blood, we're placing catheters, we're doing diagnostics, we're doing all these things. And one of those things was you know, for lack of a better term, we were social workers because that's what the clients relied on us for. It's great that we have hospitals that now have somebody actually that's trained how to do that. So we can actually do the stuff that we want to do and stuff that we've been trained to do.
Yeah.
In dealing with COVID-19 right now, what is Blue Pearl doing to keep your staff safe and keep your clients safe? And is there anything that you guys are doing different than some of the other information that's out there?
Yeah, I don't think that we're probably doing anything different or revolutionary. Certainly, this is unprecedented, right? There's no right answer. nobody knows what they're doing. so this is a free-for-all in terms of how to handle this. And, you know, we have gone to curbside triage in all of our hospitals. The clients have been phenomenal. I think the veterinary staff is also somewhat enjoying it because they get to get outside more than they ever have. But also, I think people are trying to just respect the fact that this is a serious time and they're trying to keep the veterinary staff safe. Initially, we went to curbside with PPE. And now they're wearing, you know, face masks inside as well. So following basically the CDC recommendations. So as they change, it's seemingly on a daily basis. So does our hospital recommendations on a daily basis. So as this progresses, I'm sure we will swap it out another 10 times. But the teams have been phenomenal in working around the new protocols as the new one comes out. And this is where big business, right, happens. So in a small hospital, you all have a discussion and you make a decision and it happens. In big business, they send you an email and they go, surprise. we have a new idea for how you guys can handle this. Good luck with this. And then you're like, oh, okay, great. Let's try to figure this out. So yeah, it has been, I think everyone it's been challenging. We are specialty only, so we don't see routine anyway. It is hospital dependent on whether or not they are closing down their non-emergency services and only looking at emergency services. I think it all has to do with their bandwidth, right? So there are hospitals that cannot do quote unquote non-emergency orthopedics, for example, cruciate tears or things like that, that potentially could wait without the detriment of the animal, as opposed to like a broken leg, needs to be fixed right away. Looking at that is completely interdependent of the hospital, their bandwidth, how are they doing? Some of our hospitals are crazy busy. Some of them have slowed down dramatically. There's seemingly no rhyme or reason in this entire COVID nightmare. So
has Blue Pearl given some of the practices some autonomy to say, hey, it's a little bit different in our area. We need to do something a little bit different than what the corporate mandate is. Do they have some flexibility to change what the protocols are?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the nice thing about Blue Pearl is, and you have to be, because when you're working with nothing but board certified specialists, there's no way you can tell board certified specialists, this is exactly how you're doing it and don't have any room for wiggling, right? In order to be a successful company, you have to kind of give guidelines, you have to provide a framework and allow them some freedoms within it, or you're going to have very angry boarded specialists. So yeah, to the point where, I said some of our hospitals are deciding, you know what, let's close down, internal medicine except for sick cases. Let's close down surgery except for cases that absolutely need to be cut, right? And other hospitals are like, let's just keep on trying to do our best and keep everything open. So it is hospital dependent on some of these protocols.
How do you feel, the hospital you're at specifically, how do you feel your team members are doing? Are they all handling it pretty well? Are they pulling their hair out and frazzled and just nervous, or just kind of, as you were saying, with everything changing day by day, they're just kind of rolling with the punches and going for it?
I will give a shout out to my Massachusetts crew. They are amazing. Hands down, the best. I mean, that's why I've been there for so long. They are the best team that I've ever honestly worked with. They are they go with the flow. They've got each other's back. You know, they get tighter as the proverbial poop hits the fan even more. and it definitely is flying around at this point. So they really just roll with the punches and try to make each day fun and enjoyable. And they're just great. They're really doing super well. But I think that's a testament of the team there and the leadership, right? To promote the culture of what it means to be a team, right? So they're doing great.
Good. That's good to hear.
So you've done a lot of board service in your career with both the MVTA and Avectin, and you know, Dave and I have done a little bit as well. And this is kind of
currently doing it.
one of my shameless plugs to try to recruit people to get involved in committee and board work. But why is why is that something you pursued? What got you kind of headed down that road a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll correct you just a little bit. I've actually never been on the MVTA board.
Oh, excuse me.
I know. That's okay. It is, I think, shocking to a lot of people. And while I have thought about it, it's always my bandwidth that prohibits me from getting on the MVTA board. I will say that I was introduced to the Avectin board by Andrea Steele, who more or less peer pressured me to joining the board. She was already on it, and she and I actually had sat for our exam in the same year, and so we kind of knew each other. And she approached me and said, "You know, I think you'd be really good at this, and there's a member of large position opening up, and I think that you would be a really good candidate for it." And I was like, "I know nothing about this. I'm terrified. I'm not worthy. I don't know what you're talking about." But she basically twisted my arm, and I am happy that I did it. I think it is really important to get involved in associations and academies, anything that you can get a better understanding of that area. What it means to be a veterinary technician and assistant in your area is a really big deal. And it is really important because you get a direct say in a lot of stuff that happens within your state or within an academy or even nationally if you decide to take on a national board position, say with NAVTA. It's also super rewarding. You get to meet people that and really truly grow friendships that you probably would not have had otherwise. And so I think it's super important when we sit back and we judge and we say, why isn't this happening or why is that happening? Why are they telling me I now need to be certified or why are they saying this? The best way to find out why is to actually just join the board or join a committee and then realize like, oh, this is why these decisions take so long or happen the way that they do, or this is why this is done. And so I think that for me, I've always been someone who, rather than complain about it, I'd rather have a hand in helping find a solution. So for me, that's where I've always just kind of gravitated to. And then now I've just held multiple board positions in Avectin. They're like my family.
And for those out there that may not know, may haven't done that yet, is that like a, in terms of like requirement of your time or like you said, your bandwidth, like is that like a massive undertaking or is it just kind of, you know, a little bit here and there? Like how have you found that to be in terms of like a demand on your time?
Yeah, so we have broken down, our academy did try to break it down on our members only page for our members to kind of say, this is kind of how many hours you can expect to kind of dedicate to this particular board position or this particular committee so that they could get an idea. It really truly depends on the committee and the board position. Andrea Steele lured me in with a member at large position, which does not have a lot of requirements. You're there as an active voice. You're there to share an opinion and kind of learn about the board. You're there as a voting board member, but you don't have a ton of responsibilities other than being a liaison to one other committee and just making sure that committee runs smoothly. So I thought, I can handle this. This doesn't sound like a lot of work. But then as you move into like president-elect or president or even past president, you suddenly are now, you know, getting way more into the requirements of what it takes to run the board. And sometimes it goes through, you know, waves, basically. There are times where we're gearing up for IVEX, or we're gearing up for our exam, or we have to vote on, you know, all the new applicants and what this looks like, and we have to find a pass point for them. Those are things that it takes, it's way more consuming. And so it gets stressful. There's a lot of reviewing of stuff, and then it dies down. and then it picks back up. Oh my gosh, now more people are applying. Oh no, it's applicant season again. Oh. Yeah. So yeah, it goes up and down basically throughout the year.
Gotcha.
Speaking of stress, what activities do you do to disconnect from work and kind of de-stress a little bit? Because I imagine you have a very busy schedule, so I would imagine you have to do something to get yourself out of that headspace and try to relax. What do you do for that?
Oh, yes. So I have two big loves. One is trail running in the woods with my two dogs. I have a mini Australian Shepherd and a Border Collie. And there's nothing better than just running in the woods. And I know that sounds so unrelaxing for everybody else but me. But it is just the most relaxing and peaceful thing just to run and be present with your own breath and see dogs zipping by you at 100 miles an hour. Sometimes they stop and roll and poop, and then it's not as relaxing. But for the most part, that is a very relaxing time. And then the second thing that I do is scuba dive. So I have took that up about 3 years ago, and I'm nothing short of an addict on the sport. So I scuba dive year-round here in New England. And much like running in the woods, you're present in your own space, listening to the sound of your own bubbles, and under the water, nothing can bother you. So except for the marine life. But otherwise it's just you and your own space, which is really lovely.
You said you do it year round in New England?
Yes, correct.
So in the winter, you're scuba diving?
Yes. So they make these things that are called dry suits. So it is what it sounds like. Hopefully, the theory is you stay dry. And so our water bottom temperatures will get anywhere from like 31, 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay. This past week, I went diving and it was 41 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, you know, warming up slowly. But So you stay dry and you basically wear a gigantic puffy marshmallow kind of undergarments. And so as, you know, basically wearing the biggest, puffiest winter coat, kind of like George on Seinfeld. Yeah. And so you try to stay, yeah, exactly. You try to stay as toasty warm as possible. Your face will get wet though. And so your face and your neck will get wet. And there is a moment of mind numbing cold as your brain hits the 32 degree temperature. And you think, why am I doing this? But then you descend below and you realize this is amazing. So yeah, I do it year round.
Wow. I've never done scuba diving. I am somewhat of a runner, even though I haven't really run anywhere in the last, I don't know, couple months, but I do get what you're saying about running in the woods. It's not for everybody. There's a special breed of people that can actually run and enjoy it. But I do get what you're saying about how some people think it's just crazy.
Yeah. Your pictures recently that you've been posting of the nudibranchs and stuff that you've been seeing, it's fascinating seeing all those. I love seeing all those pictures. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And I can't believe, I honestly thought, as kind of Dave was asking, I thought they were posts from older and that you weren't, you know, we didn't really do that in the winter, but I guess that makes complete sense.
Apparently you do that in the winter.
Yes, absolutely.
So what kind of projects do you have on the horizon? Anything, you know, are you working on anything else outside, you know, with everything that's going on? Or are you working on any like publications or gearing up for any conferences, hopefully, that may or may not be
hopefully they're gonna happen.
Still going on? Anything on the horizon that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tomorrow, in theory, I was supposed to fly out to Australia for the Veterinary Nurse Conference Association. It did not happen, obviously. Right. So, it is hopefully going to be rescheduled for November, but hopefully I have that to look forward to on the horizon. But obviously a little bitter, angry, sad that tomorrow I'm not leaving for Australia, as no one can fly to Australia right now. So that pretty much puts a damper on that. But always, yeah, I always love to publish. I like writing. And in fact, I think that is what got me into lecturing, though I never would have seen myself in a speaking circuit in a million years. I was shy, terrified of the stage, and never thought that I would ever get on the stage. But publishing, absolutely. I was the editor-in-chief of my high school and college newspaper. So about 2 years after graduating college, it felt abnormal not to publish anything. So I actually published an art. My very first article was called The Spleen. I know. You're all, yeah, it was riveting, The Spleen. So I published it in Veterinary Technician Magazine, which unfortunately doesn't exist anymore. But right. Yeah, I was so proud that they picked it up for publication. And all it was about anatomy and physiology and disease processes of the spleen, because we had an hemoabdomen came in to our hospital and I was fascinated by hemangiosarcoma and just started geeking out and studying everything on the spleen. And thus, my very first article got published on the spleen. So, it's very funny. But yeah, I always publish. I actually have in OAVT, so the Ontario Academy of Veterinary Technicians up in Ontario, Canada, they actually are publishing one soon on pneumonia that I'm doing. Wow. So yeah.
Fantastic.
So yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, yep. You know, one thing... You know, having you on the show, I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't ask about this. I know it's a really sad subject for a lot of us. You know, almost a year ago, we lost a dear friend to our community that I know somebody you were very, very, very close with in Louise O'Dwyer. And I wonder, you know, Dave and I, with this podcast next month, we're going to be talking a lot about, you know, mental health and just some of the struggles that the profession faces. And I just wonder if you would share a couple of stories or you know, a story or two that you remember about Louise. I just remember her larger than life personality and those big curls. And I think about her all the time. I just wonder if you would share a story or two about her.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Louise O'Dwyer. It was definitely one of my best friends. I dearly miss her. There's probably not, you know, a couple days maybe go by without me thinking about her, but she touched everyone's lives who she met. She was an extrovert and I am not. So it was a wonderful pairing combination. I think she challenged everyone in life to have fun and live life to the biggest moment. She, I know, made people step outside their comfort zone who never would have done so otherwise. And I remember very early on meeting her, and she came over to the States for a conference. And we were talking, and she was so nervous because she was going to be lecturing at a conference. And I said to her, "They will love you." And she said, "No, I'm rubbish. There's no way they will love me, right?" And I said, "But you don't understand. You have a British accent." And I said, "So Americans love a British accent. Just remember that and have fun." And I remember her coming up afterwards and going, "I think they did love my accent." And I was like, "Yes, Louise." And the funniest thing about it is, as she realized that there is a love of accents that Americans have, she then would use it to her advantage. And so free drinks, free anything, skipping lines, you name it, this girl, upgrades at hotel, upgrade to first class on airplanes, you name it, this girl managed to get it with her accent alone and her vibrant personality. So yeah, she was a fantastic individual. She lived life to the fullest and enjoyed every single moment that there was. And I think that the things that she taught us were just that, you know, you have to enjoy moment. Don't take life too seriously. Enjoy it every single time. And even the most simplistic things, right? Make sure you keep your friends close. And I think especially in this time right now, we now recognize the importance of friendships and contact with people. I know that if she were here today, she would be going mad that she was trapped in her home and not able to socialize socialize. So I know that she would be very upset, but she would be calling everybody to check in and making sure everybody is doing okay. So she always made sure that her friends were treated like royalty, and I was no exception. I was spoiled rotten by that wonderful friend of mine. So
that's awesome. I, you know, you bring up the accent in conferences, and the first time I really got to spend any time with her was actually the first CE on the Sea cruise that you were on as well. And that was the first time I had sat in on any of her lectures. And I just remember sitting there thinking, there is no way I or anybody else could get away with some of the Britishisms, shall we say, that I won't repeat on the air, that were just common lingo in the in her lectures. And I just was completely taken in by it. And well, thank you very much for sharing that.
Yes, thank you.
Of course.
You know, I will for sure be drinking some gin the next couple of weeks to remember.
I'll share a story about Louise.
Yeah, please.
A couple years ago, I put my dog Roxy down. You know, it was my first dog, my best dog. And you know, she and I were Facebook friends. We weren't as close as you guys were with her, but you know, we knew each other and we recognized each other, and obviously she was much bigger and more important than I was, but she never made me feel that way. And I remember showing up to Ivex, I believe it was in Nashville, yes. So I remember showing up at Nashville, and there's Louise, and she'd saw that I posted all the stuff about my dog on Facebook and came up to me and gave me a huge hug, like we had been longtime friends for forever. And just that compassion for me, for somebody who I just looked at myself and said, I am so far beneath her. But she did not give me that impression at all. As big of a person as she was in this field, she included everybody in that. And that's one of the things I'll always remember about her.
Yeah,
I just really appreciated that from her.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was one of her big messages. You know, I know that Ave Ecton has a Louise O'Dwyer Award for individuals who are sitting for the exam. And the purpose of the award is that it embodies that exactly what you just said, Dave, which is, she had this amazing ability to bring people together from around the world that would probably never have met otherwise, and just embrace it, you know, each other regardless of where you come from. And so I don't know that there'll ever be another person even remotely close like her.
I doubt it.
Honored to say that I really got to know her, and she was one of my best friends. So
and I think that's just a really important message overall. I mean, you know, never forget where you come from. You know, just no matter how far you get up in this field, you're not going to be above anybody else. Just everybody's on the same team, and everybody just kind of bring each other up and keep an eye on each other and look out for each other. And
Well, Amy, we're not going to take any more of your time except for just a little bit longer. I don't know how many of our episodes you've listened to, but we have adopted the Vet Tech Cafe Would You Rather. So we have a Would You Rather question for you. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay, so we had a few on the list, and I think this is the one that we're going to go with. Would you rather be able to teleport anywhere or be able to read minds?
Oh, I already can answer this one easy. I want to teleport anywhere.
to Australia, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah, I would definitely go to Australia. But I think the world is an amazing place, and I have been afforded some fantastic opportunities in my lifetime. I'm so humbled. It's ridiculous. I have to sometimes pinch myself that I get to get paid to go to these places. And who does that? Like, that's crazy to me that anyone wants to listen to me talk, let alone fly me someplace. It's mind-boggling. I can't even believe it. But the other reason is I don't really think I want to read other people's minds. I think it would clutter my own, and I think it's best they keep their own thoughts to themselves. And so there's nothing that I want to know from other people's minds. So if they don't want to verbalize it, I definitely don't want to know it.
I think I would have to agree. You know, there's that meme. I can't remember exactly what it is, but something to the effect of, did my face just really say that, or something like that? I don't know that. I'm sure people can probably already read my thoughts. So
I think I would probably do the same thing.
Teleportation, and especially now, like a deserted Caribbean island, just sounds wonderful.
Oh, that
yeah,
sounds
it does.
Great.
Yeah, it does sound great.
So, yeah. Well, we won't take up any more of your time, Amy. Thank you so much for taking some time out and chatting about, you know, not obviously not just Blue Blue Pearl, but like what it looks like to work in corporate practice and some of the benefits there and all that you guys are doing, and share some stories with us. And hopefully you have a good stout picked out for tonight.
Oh, yes. Actually, luckily I stockpiled before all of this. And yes, I do. I've got a delicious milk stout waiting for me. So
fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go.
I think I've run out of stout, so I'm in trouble.
Sorry, Dave.
All right.
All right. Well, it's great chatting with you. Thank you again so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully everything will move forward as planned with IVEX this year. And hopefully we'll see you there.
Hopefully. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
Dave and Jeff would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As we talk about difficult issues facing our profession and chat with colleagues who have strong opinions of those issues, we feel it is important to note that the opinions and views expressed by Dave, Jeff, or our guests on the Vet Tech Cafe podcast are solely theirs and theirs alone, and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Thanks again for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe.